ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। We will read three verses from 8th chapter of Canto 1, beginning from 25. I will read it first and then we'll chant 26. Or we should chant first. Janma Aishwarya Shruta Shribhi Edhamana Mada Puman Na Eva Arhati Abidhatum Vai Tvam Akinchana Gocharam Janma Ishvara Shruta Shribhi Edhamana Madapuman Naivarhatya Bhidhatum Vai Tvam Akinchana Gocharam Janmaishvaryashrutashribhir Evad Idhamanamada Puman Naivarhatya Bhidhatum Vai Tamakinchana Gocharam Janmaishvaryashrutashribhir Edhamanamada Puman Naivarhatya Bhidhatum Vai Tvamakinchana Gocharam. Edhamanamada Puman. Janmaishvara Shruta Shribhir Edhamana Madah Puman Nivarhatya Bhidhatum Vai Vavakinchana Gocharam. Ladies. Edhamana Madah Puman Naivarhatya Bhidhatum Vai Vavakinchana Gocharam. Janma, birth, Aishwarya, opulence, Shruta, education, Shribhi, by the possession of beauty, Edhamana, progressively increasing, Mada, intoxication, Puman, the human being, Na, never, Eva, ever, Arhati, deserves, Abhidhatum, to address in feeling, Vai, certainly, Tvam, you, Akinchana Gocharam. One who is approached easily by the materially exhausted man. Translation: My Lord, your Lordship can easily be approached, but only by those who are materially exhausted. One who is in the path of material progress, trying to improve himself with respectable parentage, great opulence, high education and bodily beauty, cannot approach you with sincere feeling. Going back to 25. So in yesterday, in the last verse 24, Queen Kunti described the different difficulties they experience in life, especially how they've been tried to be killed by many ways by the sons of Dhritarashtra. And now she says, such sufferings or such calamities, vipada santutah shashvat tatra tatra jagat guru bhavato darshanam yatsyat apunar bhavadarshanam. I wish that all those calamities would happen again and again, so that we could see you again and again. For seeing you means that we no longer see repeated births and deaths. Purport. Generally, the distressed, the needy, the intelligent, and the inquisitive who have performed some pious activities worship or begin to worship the Lord. Others who are thriving on misdeeds only, regardless of status, cannot approach the Supreme due to being misled by the illusory energy. Therefore, for a pious person, if there is some calamity, there is no other alternative than to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Constantly remembering the lotus feet of the Lord means preparing for liberation from birth and death. Therefore, even though they are so-called calamities, they are welcome because they give us an opportunity to remember the Lord, which means liberation. One who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, which are accepted as the most suitable boat for crossing the ocean of nations, can achieve liberation as easily as one leaps over the holes made by the hooves of a calf. Such persons are meant to reside in the abode of the Lord, and they have nothing to do with a place where there is danger in every step. This material world is certainly certified by the Lord in Bhagavad Gita as a dangerous place full of calamities. Less intelligent persons prepare plans to adjust to those calamities without knowing that the nature of this place is itself full of calamities. They have no information of the abode of the Lord, which is full of bliss and without trace of calamity. The duty of the same person, therefore, is to be undisturbed by worldly calamities, which are sure to happen in all circumstances, suffering all sorts of unavoidable misfortunes. One should make progress in spiritual realization, because this is the mission of human life. The spirit soul is transcendental to all material calamities. Therefore, the so-called calamities are called false. A man may see a tiger swallowing him in a dream, and he may cry for this calamity. Actually, there is no tiger, and there is no suffering. It is simply a case of dreams. In the same way, all calamities of life are said to be dreams. If someone is lucky enough to get in contact with the Lord by devotional service, it is all gain. Contact with the Lord by any of the 9 devotional services is always a forward step on the path of going back to Godhead. Next verse. Janmaishvara Shuddha Shri Bhir Ev Edhamana Madah Puman Naivar Hatya Vidhatum Vaitvama Kinchana Gocharam. My Lord, your Lordship can easily be approached, but only by those who are materially exhausted. One who is on the path of material progress, trying to improve himself with respectable parentage, great opulence, high education, and bodily beauty, cannot approach you with sincere feeling. Purport. Being material advanced means taking birth in an aristocratic family and possessing great wealth and education and attractive personal beauty. All materialistic men are mad after possessing all these material opulences. And this is known as the advancement of material civilization. But the result is that by possessing all these material assets, one becomes artificially puffed up, intoxicated by such temporary possessions. Consequently, such materially puffed up persons are incapable of uttering the holy name of the Lord by addressing him feelingly, O Govinda, O Krishna. It is said in the Shastras that by once uttering the holy name of the Lord, the sinner gets rid of a quantity of sins that he is unable to commit. Such is the power of uttering the holy name of the Lord. There is not the last exaggeration in this statement. Actually, the Lord's holy name has such a powerful potency. But there is a quality to such utterances also. It depends on the quality of feeling. A helpless man can feelingly utter the holy name of the Lord, whereas a man who utters the same holy name in great material satisfaction cannot be so sincere. A materially puffed up person may utter the holy name of the Lord occasionally, but he is incapable of uttering the name in quality. Therefore, the four principles of material advancement, namely high parentage, good wealth, high education, and attractive beauty, are, so to speak, disqualifications for progress on the path of spiritual advancement. The material covering of the pure spirit soul is an external feature, as much as fever is an external feature of the unhealthy body. The general process is to decrease the degree of the fever and not to aggravate it by maltreatment. Sometimes it is seen that spiritual advanced persons become materially impoverished. This is no discouragement. On the other hand, such impoverishment is a good sign, as much as the falling of temperature is a good sign. The principle of life should be to decrease the degree of material intoxication, which leads one to be more and more illusioned about the aim of life. Grossly illusioned persons are quite unfit for entrance into the kingdom of God. Text 27. Namo kinchana vittaya nivritta guna vrittaye atmaramaya shantaya kaivalya pataye namaha. My obeisances unto you were the property of the materially impoverished. You have nothing to do with the actions and reactions of the material modes of nature. You are self-satisfied, and therefore you are the most gentle and the master of the monists. Purport: a living being is finished as soon as there is nothing to possess. Therefore, a living being cannot be, in the real sense of the term, a renouncer. A living being renounces something for gaining something more valuable. A student sacrifices his childhood proclivities to gain better education. A servant gives up his job for a better job. Similarly, a devotee renounces the material world not for nothing, but for something tangible and spiritual value. Shiva Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, and Shiva Raghunatha Das Goswami and others gave up their worldly pomp and prosperity for the sake of service of the Lord. They were big men in the worldly sense. The Goswamis were ministers in the government service of Bengal, and Shiva Raghunatha Das Goswami was the son of a big zamindar of his time. But they left everything to gain something superior to what they previously possessed. The devotees are generally without material prosperity, but they have a very secret treasure house in the lotus feet of the Lord. There is a nice story about Shiva Sanatana Goswami. He had a touchstone with him, and this stone was left in a pile of refuse. A needy man took it, but later on wondered why the valuable stone was kept in such a neglected place. He therefore asked him for the most valuable thing, and then he was given the holy name of the Lord. Akinchana means one who has nothing to give materially. A factual devotee or Mahatma does not give anything material to anyone because he has already left all material assets. He can, however, deliver the supreme asset, namely the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because he is the only property of a factual devotee. The touchstone of Sanatana Goswami, which was thrown in the rubbish, was not the property of the Goswami. Otherwise, it would have not been kept in such a place. This specific example is given for the neophyte devotees who, just to convince them that material hankerings and spiritual advancement go ill together. Unless one is able to see everything in spiritual relation, as a spiritual in relation with the Supreme Lord, one must always distinguish between spirit and matter. A spiritual master like Shiva Sanatana Goswami, although personally able to see everything as spiritual, set this example for us only because we have no such spiritual vision. Advancement for material vision or material civilization is a great stumbling block for spiritual advancement. Such material advancement entangles the living being in the bondage of material body, followed by all sorts of material miseries. Such material advancement is called anartha, or things not wanted. Actually, this is so. In the present context of material advancement, one uses lipstick at a cost of 50 cents. And there are so many unwanted things which are all products of the material conception of life. By diverting attention to so many unwanted things, human energy is spoiled without achievement of spiritual realization, the prime necessity of human life. The attempt to reach the moon is another example of spoiling energy, because even if the moon is reached, the problems of life will not be solved. The devotees of the Lord are called akinchanas because they have practically no material assets. Such material assets are all products of the three modes of material nature. They foil spiritual energy. And thus, the less we possess such products of material nature, the more we have a good chance for spiritual progress. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has no direct connection with material activities. All his acts and deeds, which are exhibited even in this material world, are spiritual and without affection for the modes of material nature. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that all his acts, even his appearances and disappearance in and out of this material world, are transcendental, and one who knows this perfectly shall not take his birth again in this material world, but will go back to Godhead. The material disease is due to hankering after and lording it over material nature. This hankering is due to an interaction of the three modes of nature, and neither the Lord nor the devotees have attachment for such false enjoyment. Therefore, the Lord and the devotees are called Nivritta Gunavritti. The perfect Nivritta Gunavritti is the Supreme Lord because he never becomes attracted by the modes of material nature, whereas the living beings have such a tendency. Some of them are entrapped by the illusion, by the illusory attraction of material nature. Because the Lord is the property of the devotees, and the devotees are the property of the Lord, reciprocally, the devotees are certainly transcendental to the modes of material nature. This is a natural conclusion. Such unalloyed devotees are distinct from the mixed devotees who approach the Lord for mitigation of miseries and poverty, or because of inquisitiveness and speculation. The unalloyed devotees and the Lord are transcendentally attracted to each other, attached to each other. For others, the Lord has nothing to reciprocate, and therefore he is called Atmarama, self-satisfied. Self-satisfied as he is the master of all monists who seek to merge into the existence of the Lord. Such monists merge within the personal effulgence of the Lord called the Brahma Jyoti, but the devotees enter into the transcendental pastimes of the Lord, which are never to be misunderstood as material. So here, these verses spoken by Queen Kunti are very fundamental for understanding the science of pure unalloyed devotional service. We see, as Prabhupada explained in the purport, that generally people who are distressed, this is Lord Krishna's explanation in the Gita, who are distressed, needy, inquisitive, and intelligent, they approach the Lord in some way, with some desire, and usually this desire is some is personally motivated. So, especially those who are in need or are distressed, they ask the Lord for a material benediction. They ask for some material boons, and this is the general standard of religious people. They go to their church, mosque, temple to ask something. Of course, they bring, usually they give something, but they expect in return. And usually what they ask, please, Lord, protect us from what? From suffering, from danger. And give us what we need. Give us our bread, give us all comfort to live happily here, and then after this life, then we go to heaven or in some eternal blissful existence. Nobody prays like that. I haven't seen such a prayer. Well, rarely actually. I just remember one example, anecdote of Saint Francis, who was traveling with some friend monk. Late at night, it was a storm. There was a storm, and it was a very, very difficult journey. So they reached a monastery. They were knocking on the door and waiting for somebody to open. And Saint Francis asked, "What is the greatest happiness?" And this monk was answering different things, but he was saying the greatest happiness will be to please the Lord and to serve him unconditionally, things like that, which were in the mood of Saint Francis. But he was saying no, and he was trying different things, and Saint said the greatest happiness will be if somebody comes out and kicks us away, doesn't allow us to enter, and we go and walk to the next monastery, which is many kilometers away, and then we go there, and then also we're kicked away by rude words. Nobody gives us shelter, nobody gives us food. And this other monk was shocked. Why will this be greatest happiness? And he said, because then we'll remember the Lord in earnest, in our feelings, then we'll have nothing. It's similar mood of akinchana gocharam. But generally, nobody prays vipada santas tahsu shashvat. I want more difficulties. I want more calamities. It seems very unnatural that one wants. We always try to avoid difficulties. But Prabhupada explains in the purport and in a lecture on that verse that these difficulties are very could be very helpful in the spiritual life if they help us remember the Lord. So we shouldn't be, of course, so quick to ask for the same thing if we're not that ready to accept the difficulties as stimulus to remember the Lord. Because if we're not advanced enough, we may be distracted by suffering. That's what usually happens. I guess everyone has this experience. Want to speak of the calamities Quinquinti gives as example. These calamities, I don't think we have experience of. Anyone have any time experience somebody tried to kill him or her? Usually not. Our biggest calamities are get sick or some close person, relative, friend gets sick or dies, something like that. But the calamities she's talking about, these are all big problems. They tried to kill them many times, and she's saying, if we were in such situations, we'll remember again and again. And this remembrance is a guarantee that we'll have your association in the future, will be liberated. So, unfortunately, this is our condition. We are so much in bodily concepts, we see the dangers as problematic. We try to avoid them. We try to build up comfort. And when it comes, we usually become, when we get sick, what? We usually don't become more Krishna conscious in that state of mind. We usually become more mental, very much aware of our pain in the body, and Krishna consciousness, as much as we have it, usually fades away somewhere in the back. The more painful becomes the disease, the more we tend to forget. At least that's my experience last summer when I was in Radhakund. I got quite sick by something, probably malaria, according to one of the doctors. So it was not so much pain, but I was incapacitated to do anything and just lying. And it was quite a suffering. And I was wondering, why is this happening? Of course, we know the philosophy, Tatyenu Kampamsu Mikshamano. We have to accept this as mercy, but it's difficult to see. I had a plan. I went to the holiest of holy places in the holiest of the holy months, ready to chant all day and night and serve the Lord, in such a way. And I got so sick that I couldn't chant almost at all, just lying, couldn't do anything, looking at one point. And it was, it became so painful, I couldn't get up. I was just, suffering. And then I was getting angry at Krishna, why he's putting me, I came here to serve you, and then you put me in a suffering. And somehow I got a little bit better, and then I was in Vrindavan, and then I got sick again. And I was, why is this? What is this sinful reaction I did that I have to suffer so much? And I knew that in the Holy Dham, if, there is a statement, if one gets sick, and there are three blessings one should appreciate. If one gets sick, if one gets robbed, and if one dies. This is a good blessing, in the Holy Dham. I remember I was robbed once in Noi Bazaar, and I was like, oh, why they took my nice woolen chadar? I liked it so much. And I was, it was very painful, and then I couldn't appreciate this, but this is a blessing. And then when you get sick, I was still, confused and angry. I couldn't understand. I was looking the fault in me somehow, but then I remembered actually I drank Charanamrita, from some other, temple outside, and I had this was the reaction. Definitely, it was a simple explanation, but I was a little bit more conscious. Okay, this is maybe special mercy. But then in Mayapur, when I got even more sick with some heavy infection, then I just started laughing. Okay, Krishna, I got the point. I don't need to go in the hospital, please. I understand this is a mercy, and this is a preparation actually. For what? It's not just because for the devotees, as Srila Prabhupada says very emphatically in the purport of the next verse, anyone who chants even once with feeling, and this is not difficult to chant once with feeling the name of Krishna, there is no sinful reactions. There is no devotees, they don't have karma. They receive, of course, this body is a karma, it's prarabdha karma, it cannot disappear, but as long as we have it, we'll live with it, and naturally there will be miseries brought by it. But this is the prarabdha karma which we have to live until it finishes. But otherwise, there is no karma. We don't suffer our previous sinful deeds. Of course, we see it like that by this verse, the Tenu compound. We see it as our own, reaction to our own misdeeds, and we see it as Lord's mercy, giving it is in a very small proportion. But actually, it's not even because of suffering because you did something wrong in the past. It's suffering because of mercy. Krishna gives that so that the devotee surrenders more. That's the meaning of akinchana. Gochara means akinchana is somebody. Literally, actually, from Sanskrit means utterly destitute, or completely helpless. Somebody in such situation, this is akinchana. So Kinchana Gochara, Gochara means easily approachable. So Krishna, he has this name, he's easily approachable by the utterly destitute. Why? Because when you are utterly destitute, you easily can utterly surrender. You have no other, like the example of Draupadi. You know, she tried, she hoped for her husbands to help her, for the elders, for she was asking, pleading. Nobody did anything. And then when she was, you know, utterly destitute and helpless in all her attempts, she asked for Krishna. Then, you know, he helped her. he was easily approached in that way. So this type of dangers of suffering which Krishna sends to devotee usually is meant to give a lesson to the devotee, to help the devotee have experience. And the stories I tell about my illness was, my realization at the end was, this is very good. It happens because you experience a state of physical and mental situation which will be much, much worse when we are going to die. And when we think now we are Krishna conscious, everything is nice, we're in our comfort zone, we chant, we sing, we eat prasadam, everything is very nice. But if we get sick, and then if we suffer, we forget Krishna, we just think of our own body and mind, and just for a small sickness like whatever it is, what will happen if we, when we have to face the biggest calamity, the death. So I thought, yeah, this is very very good. It's a special kindness of Krishna. He gives you this as a lesson of preparation. You can embrace it as an opportunity. Okay, let me see how much I can remember Krishna now in this difficult time. And when we see the dangers in such a way, they become a blessing. So we should at least try, if not ask for this, at least when they come, we try to not be confused, because there is this danger when we take to devotional service and we read, for example, in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, one of the first things which is a result of performing pure devotional services, devotional service destroys all kinds of miseries, pleasure. So we think, well, my life now should be smooth. Okay, I'm doing everything. I'm following the principles. I'm chanting my rounds. I expect that now, you know, Krishna will give me in return a peaceful situation in which I can serve him, right? So this is the expectation. And if we experience some sudden difficulty and suffering, it may shock us and it may shake our faith. So this is easily, of course, to speak about, but when we fall into situations like that, then it's the real test. And I've seen examples of devotees who, you can't understand why would Krishna do that. For example, when I was some couple of years ago in Vrindavan Parikrama and in Vrajamandala, I saw there was a lady who was she was alone from the United States, and a friend of mine, you know, that couple were friends of mine, so that friend spoke with her and she explained what happened. They were like 20 years Sankirtan devotees, and they had a car accident, and her husband, he didn't die, but he was incapacitated. He broke his spine or something. So he had to be in a wheelchair till the end of the life. So you know, and I was very impressed by, of course, the determination of this lady who was so, you know, she was so fixed up and doing the parikrama, which was a very, very austere experience. And then she kept completely her faith and obviously her husband. And I thought, if I am in such a situation, I doubt, you know, if I would be that Krishna conscious, if at all. So Yeah, maybe that's why Krishna doesn't put me in such a difficulty. But my point is, if we should at least try to see when something bad happens, to see it as a blessing of the Lord, and first of all, know, as Prabhupada says, this place is a natural place for calamities. This is the nature of this place. That's what Krishna explains in the Gita, and it's made in such a way, not because of the desire of the Lord to torture us or something, to torture the living entities. It's made in such a way so that we understand this is not the place. It's not our place. This is not a place to live. This is not our place. And if we have and this is difficult to understand, if we're very comfortable, we think everything is fine, we can practice spiritual life here. Yes, we can. And Prabhupada says it's possible, and especially for someone who is so spiritual advanced, then they don't see distinction between matter and spirit. And for them, being here or in the spiritual world, the service is the same. They just use different energies, but basically one is little inferior and the other is superior internal. But eternal. But they use these energies always in the service, so it doesn't matter. But for those who doesn't see, this was in the purport of this last verse, who don't have this vision, then we have to be very careful and be watch out for the material nature, for the manifestation of the modes, which may attract us. And this is what she explains in 26th verse, that those who are intoxicated by wealth, good birth, education, beauty, for them it's very difficult to approach the Lord sincerely. The word here is abhidhatum, Prabhupada says, to address in feeling. Shiva Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and his Prabhupada says, it means to chant the name. He says, those who are mad after these material opulences, they cannot chant the name of the Lord. So this is the danger even in devotional life, that somehow we want security, and security comes with these things in the material world, when you have wealth, have education, beauty, things like that. So we not consciously may somehow, or even consciously as devotees, and even there are such examples also, devotees, we do devotional service with the aim of getting these things. This is called Mishra Bhakti. I remember Bhaktivedanta Purumaraj was giving example many years ago, some brahmachari who was really paka in everything what he was doing, very strict in all the sadhana practices in the service, really strict, fasting. Everybody was impressed. And one day there was one devotee, why you're so hard on yourself? It's just you can relax a little bit, you know. Why you have to? Krishna consciousness is fun, you know. Why you have to be so stern? And then he said, I want to go to the heavenly planets. So. And, you know, he will go, of course. You don't need actually to do so much. You just have to want it. And if you practice devotional service, automatically you can get it. But Krishna is not impressed, and therefore he is called in that verse, Atmarama. He's in this next verse, he's neutral to all kinds of people who are not interested in him with pure love. To those, he's aloof. But he's, as Prabhupada says, very attached to his devotees. They have a bond, the pure devotees. And those who have nothing to do there, another meaning of akinchana is disinterested in this material. They have nothing material. Although may have material possessions, but for them they are nothing. So Krishna sees only our feeling, our mood, and our desire for him. So liberation is also, this is in this verse, Shanta Kaivala Pataye, Patea means the master of those who desire liberation. Easily one can get liberation. Easily one can get material comfort and heavenly pleasures. Everything one can get. But this is nothing compared to the happiness which we can experience by association with the Lord. So therefore we should be careful not to slip into somehow trying to create our comfort by some of these material means, but to, you know, live simply and accept whatever arrangement Krishna gives us and use every opportunity to engage in his service with love and affection. And I think I have to stop. Are there any comments? Questions? Yes. Well, I mean, the example of course, looking at the Pandavas and their mother, which is speaking here, she's talking about the opposite, actually. So there is alienation in a sense of withdrawing us from involving our heart in this material world, thinking that we can find something there. But it doesn't mean that we give up the world. We give up our duties in the world. Because when we're born here, we have duties. So we have to fulfill those duties. And that's the example of Arjuna. He wanted to alienate himself, give up, run in the forest. Krishna said, what are you talking about? You have to do your duty, you're a kshatriya. And this is, you know, this is instruction for each of us. We have duties according to our, you know, nature to perform as in society, as you said, as a citizen. So we have to perform some work to maintain our body. And of course, as devotees, our ashrama basically is the same. We do devotional service. We have brahminical status of the ashram. And in one sense, it's everyone practices that, independent of whether is student, family, you know, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyasi. We all do the same devotional activity. So, ashram means lifestyle. In a lifestyle, we have the same duties, but in the occupation, we have different duties, and no one is encouraged to give up those duties. So, in that sense, the devotee is not alienated from the world. The devotee is active in the world, but the difference is he is not doing it these duties for one's own benefit. He is doing the duties as a service to Krishna, just like Arjuna fought and Yudhishthira Maharaj after that ruled the world, and any other occupations, whether you are a priest, teacher, administrator, or a, you know, businessman, worker, artist, whatever. You use your qualities, your natural tendencies to engage your activities in something useful and give the result to Krishna, and then this is engagement in the world in Krishna consciousness. Of course, there are some probably you mean the example of accusations of people who say of devotees who live full time in the temple and they are engaged basically in some preaching activities or temple worship, which for, you know, materialistic people they don't see immediate benefit. But even then, you know, this is not something extraordinary. This is the tradition in almost all religions. you have a class, a certain class, a certain percentage of people who are doing these things as gurus, and they see, most of them, even materialists, they see some benefits in religion, that in people engage in religion, that it brings, you know, moral standards without enforcement of law and things like that. So even that kind of work is seen by most people as something positive and needed in society, but this is a small, very small percentage in general in society, and in ISKCON this nowadays is definitely also the case. If it was different 40, 30 years ago, it's not anymore. It's a very small percentage of those who are full-time doing temple activities or preaching activities. The others are usually doing some work in the world, so in other words, they are not really alienated. Okay, anything else? Yes, please. Well, I mean, the program he left for us, the standards of our daily life, again, our lifestyle, our ashram, where we're in our, whatever our ashram is, or it's a home or a temple, it's basically, again, the same, rising up, chanting, worshipping. So there is all of the nine processes are there. Because you hear, you chant, you engage yourself in seva, you remember by these things, you do, you offer prayers by singing, by our daily singing of songs for glorification. And, you know, final surrender is, you know, you offer Krishna the result of your work in yourself ultimately. So these are all, you know, it's Prabhupada's arrangement is so simple and perfect that he by this, if we just continue to do, you know, the prescribed program he left, we'll do naturally we'll do simultaneously all of these. But the statement is there that any one of these, if you are really sincere practicing, that is enough to connect you with Krishna. So that's why that examples are given of devotees who attain perfection just by one. But normally, you know, we do simultaneously many. So we should, of course, try to do as much as possible, all of them. They're connected somehow, always. You know, remembering is the main point. You have to remember always. And when you remember, you naturally chant and hear, and then you will... You do the worship even if you're not directly engaged in, you worship Krishna in the form of his name, which is also deity worship. It's his deity form in the mind or in the heart, and then you offer prayers and things like that. It's all connected. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, this is a very good point. Another way to approach this is to just say we are. What is your contribution? You can say we're saving the planet, because this is something which they think, well, this is, we have to save the planet. But how? You know, what is your solution for saving the planet? Sustainable development. And how can we achieve it? Consumerism is bad, but everyone consumes, wants to buy and shop. And Prabhupada gives the example of the lipstick, but there is so much just the food. You know, I recently read statistics: half of the food produced in the world each day is thrown away. Half of it is thrown away, and at the same time, more than 10,000 children die every day from hunger. And what is their solution? They say sustainable. How do you sustain it? You have to control the senses. You have to educate people to restrain their senses, that they reduce their needs, because they are artificial. It's anarthi. You don't need it. And somebody has to tell them, has to show them example. That's what we are doing. This is one thing. Yeah. Couldn't get what was about the dream? Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's always, I mean, this existence is compared to a dream, because it's not, it's real, it exists, but it doesn't actually touch the soul. We're just passing through, and because we're connected with the body, Prabhupada says, because of bodily conception, we experience suffering and miseries. But actually, the soul doesn't suffer because of this. It's not touched by this. That's why it's just like in the dream. You know, you might experience suffering, but when you wake up, you know, who cares about the dream? So the same thing, the soul, once you're free from this, then it's just as you woke up, you don't care about how much you suffered or all this, because it was a dream. You don't take it seriously. This is the, in that sense, it's for everyone. It's not just materialists, it's devotees, everything, all who have bodies in this world, they experience this kind of illusion. But the devotee, of course, realizes it and understands it, or at least try to see it in such a way that this is illusory existence, and it's due to our bodily conception of life that we are suffering, and that's why we have fear of danger, which is the basic reason why we are unhappy. We try to become happy in many ways, but actually this fear of uncertainty for the future is the real problem which makes us suffer. So this fear of danger is dangerous. It's again opposite of what a pure devotee sees, all dangers. Like Vishwanath Chakravarti, of course, says that any secure situation actually is a danger. We think, no, I'll become secure, no dangers, then I can serve Krishna. But the more you're secure, the more you're in a dangerous situation. And therefore he prays, I wish that Krishna gives me the ointment of dangers, which will destroy the unsteadiness caused by the intoxication of comfort. So, yeah, this is the high standard of a pure devotee. Okay, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.